is Free Talk Live. We're launching into the first hour of the show. We're live, of course, and we'll take your calls about anything you want to discuss. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. Here tonight, it's Ian.
And Mark.
And, of course, you can bring up whatever you want on the way here tonight. I got some interesting and not-so-good court decisions. One good one. But it didn't have anything to do with the judge. It was actually a jury in the case of N.J. Weedman. We'll tell you about him. Also, topless bans have been upheld by one U.S. court, which is not good news for personal freedom. But, Mark, you wanted to talk about the homicide rate to start things out.
Yeah, I saw this really great article from Mises.org that addresses the homicide rate here in the United States. This is written by Ryan McCacken here, and you can go find it at Mises.org. And he addresses the idea that there is no such thing as an American homicide rate. You'll be told that, you know, over and over, especially after some kind of mass shooting, which I believe there's another one out in California today.
Oh, no.
Three people got killed at a school or something. That, you know, homicide in the United States is out of control compared to other Western nations and these sorts of things. And let me just read it here. In September, the FBI released new homicide data, and the overall U.S. homicide rate rose for the second year to an 8-year high.
Uh-oh.
According to the report, the nationwide
hide your kids.
In some cases, you probably should. According to the report, the nationwide homicide rate in the U.S. was around 5.3 per 100,000. Up from 4.9, which is a pretty big move.
I thought the big deal was that violent crime was on the downturn.
It's been on the uptick.
It's changing around.
A little bit.
Okay.
It was a bad economic time. And, you know, there's been racial strife. There's been some things going on.
All right.
So, anyway, the homicide rate in 2014 was 4.4 per 100,000 and had been a 51-year low and comparable to rates not seen since the 1950s. Homicide rates remain well below what they were in the 80s and the 90s, when homicide rates were sometimes exceeded 9 per 100,000. But when it comes to making any serious analysis, however, the nationwide homicide rates for a place as large as the United States are next to useless. When we look at numbers on a state-by-state basis, we find that homicide rates vary from 1.3 per 100,000.
Is that New Hampshire?
In New Hampshire. By the way, you know, New Hampshire comes out number one on this list.
Yep.
We talk about lists all the time here on Free Talk Live where New Hampshire comes out number one, and this is a pretty good list to be the lowest on in the United States.
Safest from murder.
In
New
the
Hampshire.
United States.
Yeah.
Not in North America.
Okay.
100,000 in New Hampshire to 11.8 per 100,000 in Louisiana. So that's 1.3 versus 11.8. We're talking about almost like 10 times as many murders in Louisiana as in the United States.
Wow. Oh, you mean as in
New Hampshire. I'm sorry. To offer some additional context, I've included rates from Canadian provinces to side by side. Now, there's a really great chart here that sort of goes from the top with Louisiana, Missouri, Alabama. Northwest.
Missouri's number two?
Actually, number two is Northwest Territories. I skipped over,
okay.
But Missouri's number two in the U.S., yes. So, interestingly.
In most violent? Most murders. Most murders, okay.
Yep. So Louisiana, Northwest Territories, Missouri, Alabama, Illinois,
wow.
Mississippi, Maryland, Nevada. Those are the top ones.
All right.
And you're talking about Louisiana is like leaving Missouri in the dust, 11.8 versus 8.8. So it's a big difference.
Yeah, sure.
Florida, right in the middle with 5.4, basically at the Midland of the United States, you know, Texas, Pennsylvania, those kind of things. Down at the bottom, it's going from the bottom, Newfoundland, Prince Edward Island, Quebec, Ontario, Nova Scotia, New Hampshire, New Brunswick, Maine. Interesting that it's all those the Maritimes,
mm-hmm.
right? Like those areas, that one particular area, very homogenous sort of culture, and it's
so
all.
So Maine was lower than New Hampshire?
Maine's lower. No, I was reading from the bottom up.
Oh, okay,
so
gotcha.
Maine is the second least murderous state
in
the Union. Above that is Minnesota, Massachusetts, North Dakota.
All right.
So you can have a place, a state like Massachusetts with a city like Boston and
amazing.
Still have a low murder rate because of it's just sort of cultural where it is.
Huh. You know? Well, and that is interesting, especially considering the drastic difference in gun control between New Hampshire and Massachusetts.
I mean, keep trying to tell everybody, pro and anti-gun on this show alike, gun laws don't matter when it comes to murder rates.
Really?
It just doesn't make a difference.
Huh.
I mean, do you want to have a gun?
It'd make a difference if you were the one being attempted murdered and
in all
you
likelihood,
did or didn't have a gun.
You won't have a chance to use it. In all likelihood.
Well, if they get the jump on you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm never going to tell anybody that they, especially somebody who's been the victim of a terrible violent crime, that they shouldn't be able to have a gun. But right. I am going to tell you, a reasonable adult, that in all likelihood, your gun isn't going to matter.
Hmm.
I mean, there's people that get robbed every day in the United States that have a gun on them.
Sure.
You know, what are you going to do? I don't know if every day is the right term. Going on, there are clear regional differences in many cases. States in the far north and northeast of the United States report very low homicide rates, while certain homicide hotspots, apparently in Missouri, Maryland, Illinois, the Deep South, are driving up rates. These details emphasize the mistake of speaking of the nationwide U.S. homicide rate as if it were in any way descriptive of any single trend or legislative reality in the U.S.
Sure. And even within a state like Missouri, I suspect that it's the bigger cities where you have the biggest problem and not the rural areas.
I suspect you're talking about Chicago, St. Louis, East St. Louis, Louisiana's New Orleans, and what about Mississippi and Alabama? These are very high on the list.
Yeah,
you're not talking about any thriving metropolises in those places.
Okay,
you know, what are you going to do? These details emphasize the mistake of speaking of the nationwide U.S. homicide rate as if it were in any way descriptive of any single trend or legislative reality in the U.S. We often hear about homicides are rampant in America, presumably caused by high levels of private gun ownership. But any serious look at the numbers force us to refine our question and instead ask why some parts of the U.S. have some of the lowest homicide rates in the earth, and while the situation in other areas is considerably different. Some places largely free of gun restrictions, like the Dakotas, Utah, Idaho, Minnesota, Vermont, and New Hampshire, have low homicide rates. I'll point out that Vermont just has always had constitutional carry.
Meaning you can carry a gun without asking permission.
Whereas New Hampshire
concealed.
Just got it this year. But
New Hampshire had open carry before, but now has concealed carry.
But New Hampshire has a lower murder rate than Vermont.
Not by much.
Yeah, it's by much.
Okay.
I mean, as a percentage, it's 2.2 versus 1.3.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
So, but in other places with similar or more restrictive laws, such as Missouri, California, and most of Latin America, they have much higher rates. Obviously, homicide rates are not simply a function of gun laws. And, you know, tell this to your Democrat friends over and over and over again. Gun laws don't have anything to do this. Well, I'll stop them from getting, are you sure? How are you going to get rid of those 600 million guns that are in the United States?
You can't do that. It's not possible.
Know? Yeah, they're just not going to, they're not, who's going to go around and collect those guns? You? Are you going to do it? Because I know what's going to happen to the people that try. It ain't going to be pretty.
Some people will probably not want to turn them over.
A lot of them will not want to turn them over. Like, this country, if it believes in one thing in the Constitution, it's that Second Amendment. Even researchers on the political left are increasingly coming to terms with the fact that homicide rates are not simply a matter of passing prohibitionist laws. One of the most recent examples of this is new research prescribed by...
Although, they're talking about prohibition on guns.
Yeah.
If you did eliminate prohibition, like prohibition on drugs, for instance, you probably would see fewer homicides.
I think you absolutely would. Yeah. Prohibition on drugs is what's driving most of the crime in the United States.
You got a lot of people fighting over territory, right, in different gangs and such.
If you saw the drug war change, I think that over time you would see an 80% decrease in crime.
That includes breaking and enterings and, you know, car thefts and things like that. Toll-free number here tonight, 855-450-FREE, like freedom. You can join us more on the homicide rate in the U.S., and you can bring up whatever you want on Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live. We invite you to join us right here. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. 855-450-3733. Skype username is lrn.fm. And want to make sure you know about Bitcoin.com. You've been thinking about Bitcoin. You've been researching it maybe a little bit. Well, get the basics over at Bitcoin.com. They'll teach you about what Bitcoin is, how to get a wallet, how to get started, how to acquire Bitcoin, or the new Bitcoin Cash, which is one of the hot competitors against the old Bitcoin, or what you might call Bitcoin Core, which is kind of like the original Bitcoin that is now being competed with by Bitcoin Cash, and of course, you know, a thousand other cryptocurrencies that would love to knock it out of its number one spot. You go to Bitcoin.com. You can also get some news headlines over at news.bitcoin.com about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency world. So check that out over at Bitcoin.com. Mark, you've been sharing with us information about the so-called homicide rate in the United States. As you pointed out here, was it Reason? Where was this from?
It's Mises.
Mises. As Mises has pointed out, you can't really meaningfully say anything about homicides in the United States because there's such a wide disparity between the rates within each state, as far as New Hampshire being the safest state, Louisiana being the most dangerous state, by a factor of 10. Basically.
Yeah.
So it's just not fair to say America's homicide rate is one way or the other. It's just not fair to the people in those places.
It's too
places.
Big of a geographic area.
Yeah. And Daryl actually came in during the break and backed up what I had said about each state. Even if you look at each state and its homicide rate, if you start factoring out the big cities in that area, then or in that state, then you get a completely different look at the rest of the state. And you had said Alabama doesn't have any big cities, but Daryl came in to remind you that there's Birmingham, there's Huntsville, and he mentioned one other, maybe Mobile.
It's probably Mobile.
But you know, he said if you factor those out, then Alabama has virtually no violent crime or no homicides whatsoever. So we're talking about big cities here, and you know, when human beings are packed in tightly, I suspect
it's
that
it's not just that; it's mostly the drug war.
I bet you that's a big factor.
Yeah,
but it's certainly not the only one.
It's not the only factor, but the drug war is a lot of the factor. People are warring over turf.
There's drugs in small towns, though.
There sure are, but they're not warring over turf.
Maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, you know, it's a different way of selling drugs in small towns than it is in big towns, or at least my understanding of how drugs are sold from back in the 90s.
Okay.
You know, what can I tell you? So anyway, going on with the article, one of the most recent examples of this new research described by Leah Labresco at The Washington Times, Labresco noted that few, if any, of the gun bans being floated by policymakers is likely to be effective. My colleagues and I at 538 spent months analyzing all 33,000 lives ended by guns each year in the United States. And I wound up frustrated in a whole new way. We looked at what interventions might have saved those people, and the case for policies I'd lobbied for crumbled when I examined the evidence.
Wow, that's, you know, for somebody to be able to admit that, right? Like they had a specific viewpoint. She'd lobbied for these policies and then was actually able to overcome whatever cognitive dissonance she had and was able to actually assess honestly the truth about the situation.
Yeah, this is a real
pretty impressive.
Yeah, this is a real professional. Somebody's able to step back and take a look. I researched the strictly tightened gun laws in Britain and Australia and concluded that they didn't prove much about America's policy what it should be. Neither nation experienced drops in mass shootings or other gun-related crime that could be attributed to their buybacks and bans. Mass shootings were too rare in Australia for their absence after the buyback program to be clear evidence of progress. And in both Australia and Britain, the gun restrictions had an ambiguous effect on other gun-related crimes or deaths. No gun owner walks into the store to buy an assault weapon. It's an invented classification that includes any semi-automatic that has two or more features, such as a bayonet mount or a rocket-propelled grenade launcher mount, a folding stock or a pistol grip. But guns are modular, and any hobbyist can easily add these features at home, just as if they're snapping together Legos. Silencers limit hearing damage for shooters, but don't make gunfire dangerously quiet. An AR-15 with a silencer is about as loud as a jackhammer. Magazine limits were a little more promising, but a practice shooter could still change magazines so fast as to make the limit meaningless.
Right.
By the time we published our project, I didn't even believe in any of these interventions. I'd heard politicians tout this, but I'm still anti-gun, at least from the point of view of most gun owners, and I don't want a gun in my home, as I think the risk outweighs the benefits. But I can't endorse policies.
The risk of saying shooting yourself or a child shooting itself.
I've heard the number, and I don't, I've never bothered to dig into it, but that a gun in the home is seven times more likely to kill you or a member of your family. The gun
doesn't. Well, the gun doesn't do anything on its own.
Right. Well,
you have to pick it up.
Fine. The bullet fired from the gun is more likely to kill you or a member of your family than it is some
intruder.
Bad person.
Right.
And, you have to ask yourself, is that a good idea? Is my family the one that's cut out for this? Mm-hmm. And in a lot of families' cases, they thought they were, and the fact they weren't. A gun makes it easier to commit a suicide much more quickly and easily than otherwise would be the case. That's the case. So anyway, she says, I can't endorse policies whose only selling point is that gun owners hate them. What Labresco did conclude was that the host of societal issues are driving much of what we hear about in terms of so-called gun violence, mental illness, suicide. By the way, I don't want to hear
Suicide's
anything.
Suicide's considered gun violence?
Well, yeah. It's a gun-related death.
Huh.
And this is the thing.
Seems like a completely different category.
When you see the lefties on Facebook's post stuff about gun-related deaths,
yeah,
I want to know about gun-related homicides.
Yeah, sure.
I don't want to know about homicides because you're not proposing anything that's going to limit homicides. I want to know about gun-related homicides. And if you're proposing to get rid of rifles...
Would you include accidents?
Would I?
The classic example of the kid shooting his friend when they're playing with a gun.
I wouldn't because they always react to mass shootings. If your concern is mass shootings, how do we stop mass shootings? And let's talk about that.
Well, I would say a lot of people's concern is just guns. I mean, some people believe that these are an evil tool that no one should have access to, except for the government.
In many cases, have never researched guns, and their solution is getting men with guns to go around and confiscate guns from men with guns. Mm-hmm. It is the dumbest solution, end of all, that you can find. Okay, fine. I'm down with disarmament, too. Let's start with nuclear weapons. These are the big ones, right?
Well, they don't want to disarm the government.
Right. They never want to disarm the government. And they understand how futile it is to attempt to disarm the government.
Even though at this point...
But it is that futile to try to attempt to disarm the American public because they're not going to go for it.
Even though at this point, disarming the government might get a little more, popularity among some of the liberals because they don't want Donald Trump pushing a button. But beyond that...
Look, there's no liberal or conservative out there that wants to see nuclear weapons used. The value of nuclear weapons is that they dissuade other nations from using them, but only if those nations are sane. And now you've got North Korea in the mix, and nobody thinks they're sane. But then again, nobody thought Iran or Iraq or any of those things were sane either.
The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. On the way here tonight, the Department of Justice, they're mad about encryption. Again, more on the way, and you can take control of the airwaves here on Free Talk Live. Bitcoin.com is your premier source for everything Bitcoin-related. Get help buying Bitcoins or choosing a Bitcoin wallet at Bitcoin.com. Read the latest news or even engage with the community on the Bitcoin Forum at Bitcoin.com. You can even find places to spend your Bitcoin or play online games with the cryptocurrency. The source for all your Bitcoin needs and news, Bitcoin.com. That's Bitcoin.com. It's Free Talk Live. Dial in toll-free and bring up anything that you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE like freedom, 855-450-3733. And joining us now, Johnson is in the studio. Hey, Johnson.
Hey.
We're also, Mark, you're going to tell us about Whole Food Multi-Complete.
Yeah, Whole Food Multi-Complete is much more than a multivitamin. It contains, of course, vitamins and minerals, but also enzymes, probiotics, antioxidants, an immune support system, bone and joint supplement, and energy support. They have everything that you need all in one product, and they make it easy and simple to take. You go to simplifymysupplements.com to check out more. Take a look at the list of ingredients, and I think you'll agree with me that this is a great product. I'm going to continue to take Whole Food Multi-Complete as long as, well, as long as they, as I can. I don't care whether they advertise or not. I think it's great. You just enter coupon code FTL, receive 10% off your order. Every time you order, satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. It's simplifymysupplements.com. And use coupon code FTL.
All right, as we continue, we'll take your calls and thoughts. Apparently, I didn't have Skype turned on before, but it is turned on now. You can contact us through Skype at lrn.fm. That's our username there. Stefan is in Ohio. You're on Free Talk Live.
You guys were having a discussion on the statistics of gun deaths and, you know, how it's kind of misleading when people use things like, well, there's 30,000 deaths a year. In fact, when you go on this website called the Gun Violence Archive, which keeps track of pretty much every single shooting incident in the entire country that they have data on, you realize that the amount of gun murders is actually minuscule compared to what you might think.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of total murders, or, you know, non-suicides, was 13,505. Well, 1,370 of those were general defensive use, 2,389 of those were home invasions, and 1,915 of those were officer-involved shooting, and 1,964 of those were unintentional shootings or accidents.
So what does that leave you with? Like 5,000?
5,867.
And that's homicides?
That is just general homicide, yes.
And with a gun?
Yes.
Okay.
In 1 year's time frame?
Yes. This was the data in 2015. They don't have anything for 2016 yet.
So it's about a fifth of what cars, maybe fifth or a sixth of what cars, you know, people who die in automobile accidents.
Of course. And, you know, you had brought up the argument before that if you have a gun in the house, your family is more likely to get shot. I always found that to be an absolutely horrible argument. I mean, if you have a pool in your yard, you're more likely to drown. If you have electricity, yeah, you're more likely to, sure, get electrocuted. I mean, if you have, you know, forks, your child is more likely to stab something with.
But but you can choose to have a gun or not have a gun in your house. If you don't use a gun for anything, is bringing a gun in your house a good idea? I think is what somebody is going to ask themselves.
Well, if you don't want a gun, I don't see a reason for you to bring in a gun. I mean, if you have no use for it, of course, there's no reason for you to have a gun. This is where I kind of have a disagreement with a lot of, you know, the NRA macho men that are like, I think everybody should have a gun, because there are a lot of people like that.
Yeah, I don't think people should have guns unless they want to have guns.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm in that rare camp that thinks, you know, maybe it's not a good idea to have a gun specifically for the use of self-defense.
What do you mean?
I don't see that as, you know, a scenario that most people are going to get themselves into. I mean, there is a very slim chance.
Of course, most people aren't going to. I mean, you're right. There's a very slim chance that anything bad in the way of that you needing to shoot somebody is going to happen to you in life. But, you know, the old saying is better to have a gun and not need it than to need a gun and not have one.
But the thing about needing a gun and not having one, having a gun doesn't necessarily mean you will have a gun when you need a gun. Does that make sense?
That's true. You kind of have to carry it around with you.
You have to carry it around, and you have to get it out of your waistband when the time comes, or whatever, mm-hmm, place it is that you're carrying it.
Yep.
It, you know, I mean, do you want to spend the next three decades carrying around this relatively heavy piece of metal and plastic for the chance that you might use it, and the chance that you might need it, and the chance that you might get it out of that area, and the chance that you might be carrying it at that moment? There's a bunch of chances.
A lot of people would say yes.
Yeah, a lot of people would. And God bless those people.
Yeah, because the more people that do that, the safer everybody is. I mean, if you're at a restaurant or, you know, fast food place or 7-Eleven or something like that, and somebody tries to hold the place up, it's always, you know, better
that's
to have people
idea
there that are carrying guns, because they can put a stop to that guy.
That I always hated that scenario. I think if you have a concealed carry, the only time you should ever use it is if your life is in immediate danger. If somebody's holding up the Burger King.
You don't think your life's in immediate danger if some maniac is holding up a Burger King that you're sitting in?
If you're sitting in the Burger King and the gun's pointed at the clerk and they want the money, 90% of the time they're just going to take the money and
sure.
they're going to leave. Why would you take the risk of getting more people shot? Does anybody really have to die in that situation over money?
You make a good point.
Same with somebody that comes into your house. Now, I'm not saying – now, if somebody comes into your house, I think it's a different story because then you are in danger. They've broken into your private residence.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter if they're taking your TV or your money or anything. I think that is more justifiable.
Well, if they're taking – I mean, you want to shoot somebody over and take the chance that the bullet's going to fly through the, you know, the wall of your house into the wall of the next house over a TV or money?
Yeah, not to mention the legal bullcrap you're going to get into, because if you shoot anybody and it's not instantly apparent that it's self-defense, 9 times out of 10, you're getting cuffed, you're going to jail.
Yeah, one thing I like about the discussions I've had in my Quaker meeting when, you know, things have turned to Quakers are always related to the idea of pacifism. But when the conversation has turned to this is, you know, what I've heard from at least the males in my Quaker meeting, and those would be the ones that I would be concerned with in this circumstance, is like, you know, I got a weapon in my house and I'd use it if somebody was trying to harm my family.
So they're not pacifists, is what you're saying.
That's not the impression I get.
Okay.
I mean, you know, what person is going to let their loved one be harmed in front of them?
I can't imagine most people would, even pacifists, I think most pacifists would even take action in that case.
I think that the best question is it worth killing somebody over a $400 TV from Walmart?
No, and the thing is, the vast majority of the time, if somebody is going to be in your house, simply brandishing a gun to begin with is all you're going to need to do. I mean, I've told people before, 9 times out of 10, they see the barrel or they hear the gun.
Well, if it's dark, they're not going to see it. But yeah, if they hear a shotgun being racked, then that might change their mind real fast.
For sure, for sure. Thanks for taking my calls, guys.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate hearing from you. Yeah, I mean, it's not an easy decision to make, especially for somebody, like you said, Mark, who actually has been involved in a situation, maybe in a situation where they didn't have a weapon to defend themselves with and weren't able to successfully fend off whatever the attack was. That's going to be a life-changing event that may very well encourage them to always be armed from that point in the future, even though the likelihood that anything like that would ever happen to them a second time, you know, lightning striking twice, if you will, seems pretty unlikely.
Yeah, I think people should be able to make their own minds up about what they want to do. They're responsible for their actions. If you want to carry a gun around, that gun could potentially discharge, and in which case you're responsible for that.
Sure.
Most of the modern guns are pretty good when it comes to stuff like that. It's not like Hollywood where you drop it down the stairs and it shoots 9 people in the process.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like no gun has ever fired off from being dropped.
No, most I remember being at a gun show once in Florida where somebody, I don't know if they dropped it or what happened, but a gun went off and it was an accident. You know?
Man, oh man.
That's scary stuff.
Yeah.
But,
did you get a gun while you were there?
No. I did not. No, I've never bought a gun at a gun show.
Okay.
All my guns that I've ever had have been purchased from another individual. So I'm not interested in having any kind of legal paperwork to deal with. That, to me, doesn't feel like freedom at all. So if you want to join us here, the toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733.
Another thing you'll hear from people who are into guns is that knives are just are more dangerous than guns within 15 feet, or they'll say 21 sometimes.
I've heard that.
I just can't believe it.
The idea is that somebody can close
can
a gap
stab.
Between...
Yeah, I think it might be able to stab you, but whenever you hear about somebody killed by somebody who stabbed them, you always hear, stab 47 times.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's going to stab you 47 times in that amount of time. Maybe they can. Maybe they can disarm you with a knife. I don't know.
All right, there's more on the way. You can bring up whatever you want. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, talk about guns, or whatever you want on Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live, you dial toll-free and bring up anything you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We've been talking about gun violence, homicides just in general. And, Mark, you'd started the show with a piece from the Mises Institute that was focusing on the idea that the national statistics for homicides are useless because they don't really give you any useful information as far as where are these homicides happening. Is it out in the cow fields? No, of course not. It's in, you know, mostly urban areas. And so, you know, why are they even talking about the national homicide rate when ultimately the difference between, say, New Hampshire and Missouri or New Hampshire and Louisiana is significant, as far as New Hampshire is the number one most safe state and Missouri and Louisiana the number 49 and 50.
Yeah.
So it's just not even worth talking about, but yet people still do, as though it's some sort of meaningful news. And that led to a larger conversation about gun violence in general and carrying weapons. And, you know, is it really worth it was kind of one of the questions you and Stefan were asking a moment ago, our caller from Ohio.
I think that's a question that everybody has to answer for themselves.
Sure.
And this is a question I had with my best friend. He's a longtime Democrat. And, you know, he's not sure what he believes on guns. But he, you know, is influenced by the things the Democrats say about guns, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, he lives in a very Republican place, and I, you know, that has almost no crime. And I asked him, hey, you know that every other place around here, every other domicile has a gun in it. And he's like, yeah. And you know that perhaps anybody who's thinking about doing a home invasion or a burglary is going to consider that, right? And he said, yep, I think about that a lot. Hmm. He realizes he benefits from,
yeah.
You know, everybody else having a gun, him not having right. one.
That's what I was saying earlier.
And I'm not sure that he doesn't have one, mind you. I'm just pointing out that he, in fact, realizes that everybody else has one. And that's going to do something about home invasions. Now, burglaries, it could very well be that somebody wants to wait until you're gone so they can, because the gun's probably the most valuable thing in the house. I mean,
you know, it's one of them.
What yeah. else is there?
A TV set.
TV set isn't worth crap.
True.
I mean, if you buy
the resale okay, value wouldn't be worth
my
much.
TV set is I think it's 47 inches or something. It's a big TV
yeah.
set. I paid $500 from Walmart. It's got to be 4 or 5 years old. So you
good
have
point.
To be able to get the same TV
for
now $400 yeah. from Walmart. And the resale at a pawn shop has to be $150.
Yep.
It's not worth taking the nuts and bolts off the back unless
yeah,
you've got
right.
a heroin habit.
You're right.
I mean, you know, what else is there to steal from a house?
Jewelry.
Like jewelry. But I mean, I guess we don't have any at my house.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is against jewelry and I,
good for her.
I hate the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even wear a wedding band because I'm uncomfortable with it. I fiddle with it too much and don't like it.
Video game systems would be easy to grab.
A video
That's
game
true.
System is easy to get, but, you know, by God, go ahead and pawn my PlayStation 3.
Well, yeah, you've got a PlayStation 3. I don't think that's the average.
No, I'm sure
of anybody who has one of those.
Yeah, there's more to
yeah.
get out there. There's no doubt. I'm just, you know, I don't know. There's not much in houses to steal. Seems like a really crappy business. Home
no
burglary.
Doubt. No doubt. Probably doesn't last for very long either. The more more homes they burgle,
the
closer they get to somebody with a gun.
The retirement program sucks.
For sure, especially in a place like New Hampshire where it's a much higher likelihood that you're going to encounter somebody with a gun.
Right.
Your career is going to be over fast.
You will be you know, perforated, mutilated, and spindled relatively quickly.
All right. So is that it, Mark? Were you done with your story?
Yeah. They go on to say other factors covered here at Mises.org include sky-high incarceration rates in the United States and how the history and residential mobility and cultural heterogeneity of Americans make the U.S. and Latin America very different from Europe and East Asia in terms of homicide and violence. To understand the current trends, then, we have to look beyond a few headlines about rare mass shootings and look at larger demographics and societal trends. A focus on legislation, by contrast, tends to substitute wishful thinking for an understanding of the complex reality.
Sure, and the wishful thinking is the idea that the gun laws are going to actually change people's behavior.
Right. I mean, you're looking at this chart where it shows that essentially New Hampshire is about that Louisiana is 9 times as dangerous as New Hampshire on this chart. And I'm looking at this chart of the safest places in, for murder in North America. I see Newfoundland, Prince Edward Island, Quebec, Ontario, Nova Scotia, New Hampshire, New Brunswick, Maine. You draw a circle. That's one area.
Yeah.
It doesn't just because it has a country line and a geopolitical line going through it doesn't mean anything. The it's called the Maritimes. Actually, that goes a little beyond the Maritimes, but nonetheless, the Maritimes are a very safe place, and that has to. Well, it's a long line of history. Is the reasons.
If you want to join us here, our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. So let's talk other law enforcement-related matters. ArsTechnica.com filing this report just 2 days after the FBI said it could not get into the Sutherland Springs shooter's seized iPhone. Remember that shooting that happened recently? Politico Pro published a lengthy review with a top Department of Justice official who's become the government's unexpected encryption warrior. According to the interview, which was summarized and published in transcript on Thursday for subscribers of the website, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein indicated the showdown between the DOJ and Silicon Valley is quietly intensifying. He told Politico Pro, quote, "We have an ongoing dialogue with a lot of tech companies in a variety of different areas. There are some areas where they're cooperative with us, but on this particular issue of encryption, the tech companies are moving in the opposite direction. They're moving in favor of more and more warrant-proof encryption." And I say, bravo! I'm really glad to hear this, presuming that he's being honest, which, of course, he's a government bureaucrat, so he may or may not be. But to say that these big corporations like Apple and Google are actually moving away from what the government wants them to do, which, of course, is to put backdoors into things like encryption technology, I say right on. I want to hear more about this. Quote, "While the battle against encryption has been going on within federal law enforcement circles since at least the early 90s, Rosenstein has been the most outspoken DOJ official on this issue in recent months. The DOJ's number two has given multiple public speeches in which he has called for responsible encryption."
Responsible encryption. What does that mean?
I think that means letting the government in.
Right. Encryption from everybody but the ones who need the encryption. You need to be encrypted.
You need to be protected from. Yeah, the interview with Politico Pro represents the clearest articulation of the DOJ's position on this issue, and it suggests that a redo of the 2016 FBI versus Apple showdown is inevitable in the near future. Rosenstein said, "Quote: I want our prosecutors to know that if there's a case where they believe they have an appropriate need for information and there's a legal avenue to get it, they should not be reluctant to pursue it. I wouldn't say we're searching for a case. I'd say we're receptive if a case arises that we would litigate," unquote. What he didn't note, however, is the DOJ and its related agencies, including the FBI, aren't taking encryption lying down. The FBI maintains an office known as the National Domestic Communications Assistance Center, NDCAC, which actively provides technical assistance to local law enforcement in high-profile cases. In its most recently published minutes, they said that one of their goals is to make commercial tools like Celebrite services more widely available to state and local law enforcement. I don't know what Celebrite is. It must be some sort of hacking group or whatever. It says here, earlier this year, they provided money to Miami authorities to pay Celebrite to successfully get into a seized iPhone in a local sextortion case. In the interview, Rosenstein also says he favors strong encryption. He says, quote, "Because the stronger the encryption, the more secure data is against criminals who are trying to commit fraud. And I'm in favor of that because that means less business for us prosecuting cases of people who have stolen data and hacked into computer networks and done all sorts of damage. So I'm in favor of strong encryption," he says. "This is obviously a related issue, but it's distinct, which is what about cases where people are using electronic media to commit crimes? Having access to those devices is going to be critical to have evidence that we can present in court to prove the crime. I understand why some people merge the issues. I understand that they're related, but I think logically we have to look at these differently. People want to secure their houses, but they still need to get in and out. Same issue here." Well, if you have the security, then you can get in and out of it just fine. He's talking about he wants to be able to get in.
Yeah.
He wants his men to be able to get into your devices. He later added, "The claim is the absolutist position that strong encryption should be by definition unbreakable. He says that is unreasonable." And further, he says, "I think it's necessary to weigh law enforcement equities in appropriate cases against the interest in security." The toll-free number here tonight is 855-450-FREE-LIKE-FREEDOM. That's 855-450-3733. The good news is the federal government can't do much more than stomp their feet on this particular issue, because coding things like encryption, well, that there's free speech, writing the programming itself. More coming up. Free Talk Live.
Do you want to help build a better financial system for everyone? Join Dash. Dash is digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast and easy. Fees are low and transactions are confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime for just pennies on the dollar. Get started at Dash.org. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. Join Dash and help us create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. Find out more at Dash.org and get your own Dash wallet today. That's Dash.org.
Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live. We're launching into the second hour of the program. You can join us toll free. Our number is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype as well. Our Skype username here is lrn.fm. Joining you tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Mark.
Let's go to your phone calls and thoughts. More about the Department of Justice. They are upset that these technology companies, they're not working well with the government. They're not doing what the government wants them to, which is to say, build them a back door into all of their encryption methods, which of course means that encryption would be completely pointless, because if the government can get into it, well, it's nice that you can hide your, you know, whatever it is you need to hide from, let's say, a business associate or somebody else in your household or whatever, but you can't hide it from the government, and that's the way they want things, but it's not going that direction. They're upset because the technology companies are continuing to harden their encryption. They're making their encryption a better product over time rather than building in back doors for the government. So we'll tell you more about that, and you can bring up whatever you want. Dave Ridley is on the line with us on Skype. Hello, Dave.
Hey, guys. There was something that I think sort of got missed from a couple of months ago, maybe more than a couple of months ago, but I just saw it recently when I was looking at the Libertarian Party announcement of a new state rep joining here in New York.
Okay.
So Daryl Perry, I guess former LP presidential hopeful, was saying that, I guess the, I think it was Daryl that said this, one of the speakers at this event said that the Libertarian caucus actually had, they walked out of the state house in protest over something, or they walked out of the legislative chamber. Do you know anything about that?
I did see some kind of headline about that, but I don't know what it was about.
Okay. I'm glad it made it into someone's headlines, but by and large, it's just been ignored. And it's one of those things that I just now noticed, but I think that this happened in protest over the budget when the Speaker of the House was trying to pass a budget increase.
The now gone Speaker of the House.
Yeah, thank God. But I don't know. I don't really know the details. I just thought it should get more attention.
Okay. So, unfortunately, none of us know the details either, so we really wouldn't be able to tell you anything more about that. I'm glad that we have a Libertarian caucus. I know that Caleb Dyer, who is the head of that caucus, he was the first state representative earlier this year, a former Republican, to make the flip to the Libertarian Party. He was followed by another gentleman from Keene, actually, Joe Stalkop, and then another
Democrat.
A Democrat, and then another Republican. So there are three Libertarians who have made the flip. They've created this Libertarian caucus there. I think that's really awesome news. Nothing like that exists anywhere else in the country. And Caleb is one of the bloggers at freekeen.com, so I'd love to have him contribute more about sort of the goings on of, you know, what's happening within the Libertarian Caucus, the positions that they're taking. And we are still just, you know, in the very beginnings of the 2018 session, if you will. They haven't really officially got the ball rolling on, you know, the real, like, bulk of the hearings that are going to be happening. Those usually start, I believe, in mid or early January. So maybe we'll see more out of them at that time. But, you know, it can be hard to be a state representative and to handle your own publicity at the same time. So, I mean, we can't blame them for maybe not doing the best job in the world of publicizing their own efforts. That's sort of, to some extent, our job. But ultimately, if nobody tells us about it, then we can't do much, can we, Dave?
No, but I've always been kind of skeptical, you know, of Libertarian Party type efforts. But it seems like over and over again, this little caucus and Jaleta Jarvis, the possible gubernatorial candidate, they keep doing little things that are worth talking about. And this, so if it's worth talking about, I'm sort of not against it anymore. Now I'm thinking, you know, maybe LP activism, you know, maybe it's useful after all.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. Of course, the Libertarian Party activism in New Hampshire is useful because we are actually having an impact here. Libertarians elsewhere in the country basically are spinning their wheels and, you know, doing very little. I mean, every now and then they'll reach some new people with the ideas, and there's some value there. But if they want to actually have a chance at getting elected, if they want to have a real impact on the political process, then you got to move to where other libertarians exist and exist in large numbers, and that's New Hampshire.
Well, I know that
I'm sorry.
This is Dave.
Dave Ridley. So I know Ernie Hancock out in Arizona. He's told me that apparently there's a certain amount of dialogue that goes on between the Libertarians and the Democrats there. The Democrats will fund Libertarian activities in Arizona with the intention of drawing votes away from the Republicans so that the Democrats have a chance to win. I know that Republicans here in New Hampshire have similar concerns.
Yeah, and I'm not dismissing that. That's always been my concern too. And I could be wrong that the LP is doing less good than harm. If there's some harm they're doing that I'm not seeing very well, then that could be the case. But as long as, you know, they're doing some good, I guess I'm going to talk about the good they're doing.
I'm sorry, I don't buy the claim that libertarians will spoil an election one way or another. I don't care. It's been my observation that libertarians can attract votes from both the Republicans and the Democrats, and more importantly, can attract votes from non-party affiliated people, from independents. And in New Hampshire, the majority of the voters here are the undeclareds. They're the people who are not interested in one party or another. They're just people who don't want to be aligned with the two main political parties. And they're more independent, more likely to look at the candidates and really consider them based on who they are and what they stand for rather than their political party. That's one thing that I think makes New Hampshire special, that we have so many independents and undeclared folks here.
Well, I can tell you this. You know, Chris Sununu, who's the governor of New Hampshire, but, you know, a lot of liberty activists seem to have, you know, they may not be enamored with him, but they think that he has his good points. I voted for
the previous person had their good points too.
Nah, she really didn't.
No, she had very few.
She signed medical cannabis.
Yeah, you know, finally, after being clubbed over the head to release her, you know, death grip on the police union.
She also signed the increase of the amount of. The amount of money you get credited towards a fine per day you sit in jail. I mean, I can find things
Chris
she signed
Sununu
that was good.
Chris Sununu did more good than she did in his first week.
I would agree with you. Sununu has been better than she is, but I can find good things that both of these people did, I bet you I can find bad things that Chris Sununu did.
I'm not disagreeing with you that she has done good things in her life.
What's that have to do with libertarians?
Well, I voted for the Libertarian in the election. The Libertarian drew my vote away when it would have potentially, in his absence, the Libertarian's absence, gone to Chris Sununu, right?
So that's just a case study. There's probably people who would have voted for the Democrat but voted for the Libertarian. Because libertarians attract people from all across the political spectrum, because our message is a moral message, one that says you shouldn't use aggressive force against your neighbor. And there's nothing saying that Republicans believe that any more or less than Democrats do.
If you're a person who is somewhat in the know about what the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire is doing, you know, contact me and tell me what's going on, and I can, you know, amplify it a little bit.
I know the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire is obviously gearing up to run a bunch of candidates coming up in 2018. They, of course, in 2016, for the first time in 20 years, did get ballot access at the same level as the Republicans and Democrats. So a big accomplishment for the new Libertarian Party here, which back in the end of 2016 was taken over by our very own Daryl W. Perry and Roger Paxton, who were two people who migrated here, as we all did, as part of the New Hampshire Freedom Migration. Oh, and just to clarify, Dave, I was just looking around to see if I could find that story about the Libertarian Party caucus walking out. Apparently it was a post that you made on the Shire Society forum is what I saw. So the headline that I saw was the one that you wrote about it. So I think we're at an impasse here. Nobody knows anything about this.
Yeah. A tree fell in the forest and no one heard it.
Yeah, it's so important for libertarians in New Hampshire to publicize their efforts and their actions so we can get that out there and express to folks who are on the outside how different and how special the place this is and how many cool things are really happening here. Because there's a lot more than we could possibly report on, even if we did know about them. Hey, Dave, thanks for the call tonight. Dave Ridley from RidleyReport.com. We're coming up here. You can join us. This is Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. Dial toll free. Bring up what you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. And we've got Skype as well. It is Skype username lrn.fm that allows you to contact us to bring up whatever it is that's on your mind here on Free Talk Live.
Blink Home Security. This thing is so easy to set up, and it's pretty inexpensive, too. When I got it, I just plugged the hub into my router and downloaded the app, hooked in the cameras, and now I can, you know, I get notifications whenever something moves in front of the cameras at the prescribed time. I have it set for certain times. And also, I can go check in at my house anytime I want. I can look on what's going on right now. Chances are good. Nothing. But that's
so
what you
can totally
see.
Creep on Daryl when he's sitting in on your house sitting.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want to do. I think I'm going to set Daryl up on the system because it makes more sense that he be able to use it while right. I'm away. But anyway, by the way, for those that don't know, I am taking off on Monday and will be gone for some period of time. Hopefully be back sometime during this winter. Anyway, you can get 3 Blink cams for the price of what the other guys charge for one by just visiting blinkprotect.com/FTL. It's blinkprotect.com/FTL. Go there, check it out. I think you'll find that this system is as good as I say, blinkprotect.com/FTL.
All right, you can bring up what you want. Our toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. As we continue here, we've been talking about the Department of Justice and one of their boss men doing an interview for Politico Pro, where they're complaining about the tech companies in the United States who are putting up a barrier against the U.S. federal government. They're not letting them have a back door into their encryption technologies, which I think is good news, but he calls it unreasonable. Now, according to ArsTechnica.com, the DOJ's position runs counter to the consensus of information security experts who say that it's impossible to build the strongest encryption system that would also allow the government access under certain conditions. Bruce Schneier, a well-known cryptographer, wrote last year, quote, "Of course, criminals and terrorists have used and are using and will use encryption to hide their planning from authorities, just as they will use many aspects of society's capabilities and infrastructure, cars, restaurants, telecommunications. In general," Schneier says, "we recognize that such things can be used by both honest and dishonest people. Society thrives nonetheless because the honest so outnumber the dishonest. Compare this with the tactic of secretly poisoning all the food at a restaurant. Yes, we might get lucky and poison a terrorist before he strikes, but we'll harm all the innocent customers in the process. Weakening encryption for everyone is harmful in exactly the same way." Now, I would have put it in this way, in that the government has been proven to be dishonest.
Yeah.
Like, we know that the government are made up of liars and thieves and other various sorts of criminals. So while the government would like you to believe that they're just working for you, They're working for the safety of all Americans. I'm sorry, but we've seen plenty of examples of government horrors, government murders, government, you know.
The evidence isn't even weighed in their direction. Right.
Government lies, fabrications, you know, putting innocent people in prison. And I'm sorry, if we're talking about human beings in government, it's inevitable that you're going to be dealing with some corrupt and some very bad individuals. You look at the Silk Road case. Even in that case, you had a couple of federal agents who took plea deals because they were stealing the Bitcoin that they took from the Silk Road, which is an underground darknet marketplace.
And they also found fabricating evidence, but we're not sure what.
Yeah, there was definitely some fabricated evidence.
But of course,
this guy
needs to go to prison for two life sentences.
You're talking about the guy running the Silk Road, Russ
right.
Ulbricht. So, you know, I'm sorry, you can't trust the government, to be honest. Yes, every now and then, they do go after real criminals. There's no doubt about that. But the fact is, they also consider things like sharing a movie online to be a criminal act. They also consider things like selling, a quarter pound of marijuana to be a criminal act. They think all kinds of things that involve two consenting adults two or more consenting adults to be criminal acts. And as long as you have, in my opinion, a criminal government out there, there's no way in hell that they should have access to encryption technologies like this. Going on, Rosenstein, this is the bureaucrat, closed his interview by noting he understands re-engineering encryption to accommodate government may make it weaker. He said, quote, "And I think that's a legitimate issue we can debate. How much risk are we willing to take in return for the reward?" What's the reward exactly?
What exactly is the reward?
He says, "My point is simply that I think somebody needs to consider what's on the other side of the balance. There's a cost to having impregnable security, and we've talked about some of the aspects of that. The cost is that criminals are going to be able to get away with stuff, and that's
what
going
are the criminals going to get away with? It's going to be right terrorism, right? Well, why does terrorism exist? Because the government is meddling in other governments and other regions' business.
Primarily.
I got an idea. Get them the hell out of it, and then you won't have that problem. Mostly.
Mostly.
I mean, you know, there probably will be some religious nut job that says, all Christians must die.
I mean.
But not very many. Secondly, what are we talking about here? Drug dealers, organized crime? Their big money comes from drugs, prostitution, gambling, right?
Prohibitions.
Well, prohibitions. Get the governments right out of prohibitions. Libertarians have just solved your criminality problem, and you can keep your encryption. Look, problem solved.
Well, also, let's look at the example of this shooter, the one in Texas that they couldn't break into his phone.
Yep.
Last time I checked, he's dead. So you don't have a prosecution to engage in with that particular guy. If you're dealing with somebody who's going and blasting away innocent people in a public place, there's not really going to be any evidence on the phone that you're going to need to retrieve to prove that this man did that shooting, right?
Yeah, I think they want to know why.
They're probably interested in seeing if he had a conversation with ISIS or something like that, right?
Or
like,
any direct accomplices that might be planning any additional attacks in the immediate future.
Sure, sure. I mean, that's a speculative thing. It's certainly possible he wasn't alone, you know, in his planning of this, but it's more likely that he was. I mean, so many of these shooters, whether it be the guy in Vegas or this guy, they've always seemed to be lone nuts, you know, with the exception of the Columbine shooters who actually did it as a pair of
nuts.
Yeah, but their conversations.
Well, the Las Vegas guy supposedly had some woman or something, right?
I mean, he had a girlfriend.
But
she wasn't there.
There was questions around that though, weren't there?
I thought she was out of the country at the time.
I don't know.
Anyway, the toll-free number, if you want to join us here, is 855-450-FREE-LIKE-FREEDOM. Regardless, maybe they could learn something from being able to get into this person's phone, and maybe that would be of some kind of value.
Sure.
But whatever the value is, it's not higher than the value of being able to keep information from the government, the very same government that wants to put innocent, peaceful people in prison cells just so they can fund a larger prison industrial complex.
Right, and let's not forget that if you give police law enforcement enforcement, the government, the ability to crack a phone when something like this occurs, something terrible like this occurs. They can also crack it whenever somebody goes across the border or enters a TSA checkpoint or anything like that. Do you really want to give the power to the government to get into your phone every time you cross the border or get into a TSA check line?
Definitely not.
Because that's going to take, it's going to add a lot more time, and you're going to have a lot of things, you know those dank memes that you've been posting? One of those TSA agents is probably going to have some questions about the dark humor that you've got.
The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. You, of course, can bring up anything that you want here on Free Talk Live.
Is your storage food wasting away under the stairs? Can you actually cook with your long-term stored food? Let Chef Keith Snow of Harvest Eating teach you to make gourmet meals from cheap ingredients in his new online course, Food Storage Feast, with dozens of videos, printable recipes, and professional knowledge. Don't just store food, store skills so you can eat well before and after the apocalypse. Get your skills today at foodstoragefeast.com. Prepare like a Boy Scout and eat like a king. And whatever you do, don't get caught with your pantry down.
It's Free Talk Live. Dial toll free. Bring up whatever you want. Our number here, 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. Skype username tonight is lrn.fm. Joining you in the studio, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Mark.
Of course, you can bring up what you want. Our toll-free number again is 855-450-FREE. Let's get to a little bit of good news. New Jersey weed man found not guilty on one of the witness tampering counts. The jury was hung on count number two. Update from NJ.com.
He definitely didn't tamper with this juror, but maybe that one.
No, it wasn't jury tampering, Mark. It was witness tampering this case. So for those that may not be familiar, and I don't know how detailed Olivia Rizzo here from NJ.com gets into, but yeah, let me give you a little bit of background on this case. New Jersey weed man, probably the most prominent marijuana decrim slash legalization advocate in New Jersey. He has been targeted, of course, as, you know, again, we're talking about the government here. They are not good people. So they're going after a peaceful man who just wants to allow people to smoke cannabis on his property. He had a restaurant that he was running called New Jersey Weed Man's Joint, I believe. And he opened it up right across the street from City Hall and the police station there in Trenton. He also had a church that he opened next door to that. And again, these were places where marijuana, cannabis users, medical patients were welcomed. The police raided that location. They arrested approximately 11 associates as well as New Jersey Weed Man. And it was determined later on that there was an undercover informant who was attending this place, the restaurant and the church, and hanging out and, you know, getting to know people and working himself into these circles. And ultimately, he's the one who is the state's key witness against these folks. And when New Jersey Weed Man figured out who it was, they revealed him publicly.
Yeah.
Which,
it's
I'm
not
sorry.
Really witness tampering.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That should be legal to do. This is somebody who took a risk. You know, a lot of times the informants are told, oh, yeah, we'll protect you. Go on in there. You can be our snitch, and we'll protect you. We won't even charge you for the thing we arrested you for.
Vast majority of the time. I don't know how to say anything more than that.
99%.
Yeah, 99%+ chance is that, you know, either the charges will be dropped or there'll be a plea bargain. The idea that there'll be a jury trial, I mean, yes, other than the fact that this is New Jersey weed man, like you would have been able to presume because he's won so many cases that there would have been a jury trial in his case. But anybody else, the chances are just approach zero.
Exactly. But nonetheless, they did find somebody to go in and take this particular role. And then New Jersey weed man spread the information and his friends spread information to the community about, hey, here's a snitch. Look out for this guy. Here's his picture. We know who this guy is. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the dude's name. But we did talk about him the first time we learned about him. We did find out who it was. And I'll see if I can pull that up here shortly. But anyway, the point being that what you're saying here, Mark, is normally an informant is never called to the stand. Normally the informant just gets to snitch. The cops arrest the person takes the plea deal, case closed. But in the case of New Jersey Weed Man, or in the case of, let's say, Rich Paul, who's a co-host on Free Talk Live for a while, who also didn't take the plea deal, well, we got to see what the undercover agents looked like. Or in the case of Weta Claus here in New Hampshire, we got to see what the undercover agents looked like in that case.
You couldn't take pictures during court, though.
That's right. They wouldn't let any cameras into the courtroom. There was one video camera, but it had to face the wall during the undercover agents testifying. But we all saw them. And then when later on, it was actually after your court hearing in Sunapee or wherever it was, Newport, in New Hampshire. We were going to a restaurant afterwards when me, Pete, and Ademo from copblock.org noticed one of those very same undercover officers sitting in a car talking to some kid in another car in a parking lot, like, you know, driver's side window to driver's side window.
Cop parking.
And one of us noticed this and said, hey, isn't that that guy from, you know, that undercover cop from that trial? And I'm like, yeah, that looks like him. And so we took off running over there, and the dude screeched his tires, peeling out of the parking lot. He couldn't get away from us quick enough. And then turns out that the kid in the car was about to sell him an oxycodone. He'd actually, the cop had handed him $20, and the kid was supposedly getting the oxy out of wherever he had it stashed. But we intervened at just the right time to prevent that kid from getting arrested for a felony drug dealing charge. So that was one of the sort of unintended positive consequences of having Weta Claus take his case to trial, because we actually got to see the undercover agents. Same thing in this case with the guy down in Jersey.
I'm surprised none of you guys there, you enterprising young activists, snuck in some kind of fake camera, you know, that looking like something else, and took pictures of these guys while they were on the stand so that you could then distribute them online so that other activists would know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to tell you, Mark, if anybody did anything like that.
Well, they didn't distribute them because I would have seen them, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to comment on anything about that. So, anyway, back to the story out of Trenton, where the jury found NJ Weedman, Ed Fortune, not guilty of the more serious witness tampering crime that he was charged with, and then was hung on the second count of the same charge. The marijuana advocate was visibly excited with the outcome. Once the jury had cleared the court, Fortune raised his hands in victory before making an oral motion to Mercer County Judge Anthony Massey to reopen his detention hearing. NJ Weedman does remain jailed. Massey noted the oral request but said it needed to be properly filed. As the jury was leaving the courtroom, Fortune leaned down into the microphone and thanked them. Late Thursday, in a call from the Mercer County Jail, Fortune said, quote, to all the jurors, thank you. I've always believed in the jury system, and in this case, it worked out. I'm happy as hell.
In this case, it worked out. I haven't always believed in the jury system. Interestingly,
there are plenty of cases where it has not worked out.
Yeah, the United States is very, very rare. It's an outlier in the world as far as jury trials. Usually you get a panel of judges.
In court, clad in a red and black suit, Fortune had given supporters sitting behind him a quick thumbs up before the jury entered the courtroom. Moments later, they found him not guilty of a second-degree witness tampering charge and was hung on the third-degree charge. Neither Mercer County assistant prosecutors who tried the case commented on the outcome, saying the matter was still pending. Prosecutors allege the marijuana rights advocate publicly outed the witness, who he believes informed on him to authorities in the investigation that led to the 2016 drug raid of his Trenton restaurant. The prosecutor's office now has 120 days to retry Fortune or dismiss the charge. A status conference date will be set to discuss the future of the case. In the Thursday night call, Fortune reiterated his stance that there will be no plea bargains, and if the Mercer County Prosecutor's Office wants to try him again, he's ready for round two. He said, I am going to trial. After the verdicts, a group of his supporters were initially happy when the jury ruled that Fortune was not guilty on the first count, but became frustrated when they learned he would not be released from jail. Debbie Madeo, Fortune's fiance, says that's not what he's guilty of. He's guilty of being an a-hole. Madeo said she's worried Fortune will remain in jail for several more months until a new trial can begin. She then echoed statements Fortune has made in the past about not receiving a fair trial. During the trial, prosecutors argued Fortune had badgered the witness online and had sent mail to his neighbors. Fortune testified that he was an ass and he posted on social media a lot, but he didn't believe that what he was doing was illegal and the prosecutors were pursuing a fake case. So he's still in jail. I hope that they can get bail on this. I don't know if he's in jail just on these charges or also in jail on the running a marijuana related business, whatever those charges were that they'd initially hit him with. Because remember, the witness tampering charges came after he was already raided by Trenton police for running this restaurant and the church, where people were encouraged to bring cannabis to sell or to share cannabis at that location. So I'm not real clear on the status of those charges right now. So if you know more about the NJ Weedman case, you want to give us an update, please join us here. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. But regardless, kudos to NJ Weedman, who basically defended himself in this particular case. I believe he had a standby counsel, but I think that he took on this case on his own.
It's a good thing, because he wouldn't have won otherwise.
I think that's the right move to make in that case.
In some cases.
Yeah. So, more on the way here. You can bring up what you want. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live, and you can dial in toll-free here. Bring up anything you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, so feel free to Skype on in here at Skype username lrn.fm. Joining you in the studio here, you've got Ian.
And Johnson.
And Mark.
You want to help build a better financial system for everyone? Join Dash. Dash is digital cash. It's a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast. It can be private and easy. Fees are low. Transactions are quick and can be confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime for just pennies on the dollar. And Dash is decentralized and run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. So join Dash and help create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. Find out more at Dash.org. There's a lot of momentum behind Dash right now, more so than ever, I would say. Dash hitting recent highs within the last, several days?
Yeah, it's a good day to be a Dash owner.
Sure is. Good week to be a Dash owner. And you can get some on your own. Just go to Dash.org and learn a lot more about it there. I'm pretty excited about Dash because they have announced that in their upcoming hard fork that the Dash community had agreed with, like 99%. So this is not a contentious fork in any way, shape, or form. We've talked a lot about the contentious forks of the Bitcoin movement here, and we're going to actually bring that back up here in just a moment. I know, Johnson, you had a story about that. But there's been a lot of difficulty and frustration and anger within the Bitcoin community over different directions that programmers want to go. The Dash community seems to be united behind the idea of increasing their block size, which is the big controversy within Bitcoin. Dash is doing it. They're moving ahead to a 2 megabyte block already, even though they're nowhere close to filling up the 1 megabyte blocks right now. So these guys are future, they're future proofing this as much as they possibly can. And then you've also got the major announcement, which I think probably spurred a lot of the excitement. This is speculation, obviously. I don't know why coins go up or down in price, but I would say that it's definitely a good bit of publicity for Dash.
That somebody found out that Free Talk Live's renewed their advertising contract with Dash?
No, but that's good news. What I was going to refer to was the idea that, Dash is going to lower their transaction fees. So right now, you might spend on the high end, let's say, 2 or 3 cents for a Dash transaction. Coming soon, and I don't know when this hard fork's supposed to go into play. It's probably sometime this year, but I don't have an exact date for it. I suspect I could probably find that if I dug around enough. But at some point, they're going to do this hard fork, and they're going to lower the transaction costs to a third of a penny per transaction. And that's supposed to be a flat fee. So no more worrying about how much a transaction is going to be like we do with Bitcoin every time. Every time I pull a Bitcoin wallet up, I'm like, well, how much is it going to be this time? $5? $10? $12? Just to send, $2
worth of
Bitcoin?
I kind of think it's the Bitcoin fees that drove it, not so much the Dash lowering its, announcing that it's going to lower its transaction fee. Dash's transaction fee was already 1 or 2 cents. I mean, I just sent a transaction today for a penny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty common with
Dash. Pre-fork. So that's the price.
But now they've got to compete with Bitcoin Cash, and Bitcoin Cash is trying to be a lower fee version of Bitcoin, but it's not going to beat Dash because Dash, they've had this planned for a while.
Yeah, I mean that's just that. My theory is that people, you know, first they ran to Bitcoin Cash, and then they thought, you know, then some of them, if they decided to run, they decided, you know what, Dash is a better place to run. So
my only difficulty here with Dash is that it's just not as well known as Bitcoin, right? Johnson, you're helping me design some advertisements right now. We're going to be doing some local advertising as we started doing a year ago, the Shire Free Church started to run local ads here in the Keene, New Hampshire area. We started with radio, and then a few months later in mid 2017, we moved from radio into newsprint. And you did some of those ads. And at that time, we were promoting Bitcoin. And we were giving away $10 worth of Bitcoin to anybody who would respond to the ad. Now, we only put the ads in local media. So it wasn't an available offer to somebody outside of this particular region. The idea was we wanted people in this area to learn about Bitcoin, to learn about cryptocurrency, and to get some of it. You know, your first hit's free, that kind of thing. So now that Bitcoin is basically unusable for retail transactions, and in the Keene area, like in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, we have in New Hampshire two of the arguably the highest number of Bitcoin accepting businesses per capita anywhere in the world. So in this place, you can actually spend cryptocurrency. You can go downtown in Keene, New Hampshire, and you can spend Bitcoin on anything in the corner store, Corner News, or the local burger shop, or one of the pizza places, Little Zoe's Pizza. There's a barbecue place. If you want to spend the $5 to $10 fee to do that, it used to be $2 or a dollar or 50 cents or whatever.
Isn't it there's some kind of payment processor in Japan that makes it so that you can spend Bitcoin basically at any store in Japan?
I don't know anything about that.
That's my understanding of it. But that they're not. The store isn't accepting Bitcoin. You can pay in Bitcoin, if that makes sense.
No, that doesn't make any sense because, you know, if you want to look at it that way, then the Coinbase Shift card allows that too, where you can use this debit card looking thing that is loaded behind the scenes with Bitcoin, and then you're arguably paying with Bitcoin, but the merchant receives cash in those transactions. What does the merchant receive in Japan in this particular case?
Probably whatever they want.
So, I mean, if the merchant hasn't consented to accepting cryptocurrency, then they're probably not going to be receiving cryptocurrency.
That's right.
So I've got something actually on that. You know, you're talking about doing this, you know, switching from advertising Bitcoin
to Dash.
Yeah. But I actually want to say, you know, if people are talking about cryptocurrency in general, right? So I actually did a project kind of recently where I'm trying to help kind of push along a logo for cryptocurrency as a general sort of thing. Like, we need a graphic for representing cryptocurrency.
Oh, nobody had done this, right? Nobody had done this before you?
There were some people who were attempting it and not doing a great job.
You're
in
a
my
graphics
opinion.
Professional.
Yeah, I'm a graphics professional. There was a logo out there that I thought was a fairly good stab at it, and I kind of modified based on some German designer. So I reworked what had been some of the work that had been done to make a more symmetrical, kind of individualized unit logo so that it could be put in places without unbalancing a design. Okay. The original design that I had seen, the attempts at this, you know, were hard to work with. So I made a version that I released as a public domain logo. It's free for anyone to use.
You put it on Wikipedia, right?
I put it on Wikipedia.
So if you look up cryptocurrency on Wikipedia, is it still there?
Originally it was there, but the editors of Wikipedia, they yank things really, really fast. So if anybody wants to see this, it's tinyurl.com/cryptologo.
Okay.
And that's all one word, cryptologo. Tinyurl.com/cryptologo. It's free. Anyone can use this logo if you have a cryptocurrency podcast or cryptocurrency whatever. You want a logo to represent cryptocurrencies. Like there's a pound symbol, a yen symbol, a dollar symbol. You know, cryptocurrency needs a symbol, a generic symbol. I mean, there was the Bitcoin symbol, which is the B with the little, you know, lines on it.
Yep.
But cryptocurrency hasn't really had a symbol thus far, and I want to help change that.
How can... Okay, so you put it on Wikipedia. They pulled it.
They pulled
How do you deal with that?
The file is still on Wikipedia, so it is a vector, SVG, scalable vector format graphics.
You can scale it as large as you want.
Yeah, it's a scalable vector format, scalable vector graphic format file, which is an open standard. It's available on Wikipedia still. However, they pulled it from the cryptocurrency entry. And the reason that they said it is obviously is like, you know, who you say this is a proposed logo. Who's using this logo? And the answer is...
Nobody.
Well, me, yeah. Because no one else has really done this. So, you know,
right.
Who's
going to
use it? So it's, you know, the Wikipedia editors, I've never been a huge fans of most of the people who are regular editors of Wikipedia.
So
They're
what do you do instead? I mean, do you go to Reddit? Do you go to different places like the Bitcoin Talk forums or like places where crypto people are and like post a new thread?
I could start going crazy with it and try to, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I've released it in the public domain. It's up to people to use it if they want to use it. I mean, there's nothing else out there right now, so I don't really know.
But if you want them to know about it, obviously,
we're talking
about it here.
Yeah,
but,
we're talking about it here. We'll see.
But, you know, if you want the crypto community to know about it, maybe put it in certain places where a lot of those people hang out and get some feedback. Maybe somebody will see it and be like, yeah, I got to put that on my website.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. I mean, that's what I'm going to, you know, slowly do. I've got other things that I'm worrying about now.
Yes, indeed. I don't know if you're ready to talk about that.
We should probably let the amplifiers
in on the other thing first. That's what I'm thinking, because they like to know about things first.
Okay.
And they're more likely to be cool with like beta testing the thing. Because it's still kind of a beta.
Yeah, it is.
So we're not going to say more about it right now on the air. But put together a post for the AMP Facebook group. And I can send something out to the AMP email list so all those folks can get it. Too. So if you're an amplifier, you're going to get to find out first what Johnson's talking about here. Right. And I think you're going to be pretty excited about it. It's been something that's been a long time coming. We'll say that. And that might tell you what it is. Hour number three coming up.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Worden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing too. Invest in liberty and property. Mark Worden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live. You can bring up anything that you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype at Skype username lrn.fm. With you in the studio here tonight as we launch into the third hour, you've got Ian
and Johnson
and Mark
to your phone calls and thoughts. Then coming up, Johnson, you'll be telling us about the two sides squaring off in this Bitcoin fight.
One author's strange interpretation of the two sides.
And then we'll get your thoughts on that coming up here in moments. It's been just an amazing last few months in Bitcoin and sad in a lot of ways. But let's talk to Dan. He's in Nebraska. You're on and listening via the LRN.FM app. Go ahead, Dan. Dan, in Nebraska.
Hey, Ian.
Hey there.
So tonight I was listening to your show and I heard that little bit about the DOJ and the encryption.
Yeah.
And in a way, this is a part of like a much larger thing I've been thinking about that actually absolutely makes my blood boil. And it's that I feel like what I want to happen in the future is have this sort of movement that I consider myself to be a part of to gain more traction. And that is what I like to dub, and it's my own personal definition, the young right, where we have this really unique blend in the United States of libertarianism, but also nationalism, as even though they sound kind of like opposites, they kind of blend well together. If you look in places like, I would say maybe the Donald on Reddit and the like.
So
and
you're suggesting
patriotic Kekistanians.
Are you suggesting that Donald Trump is a libertarian? I'm not sure I understand.
No. I'm saying that the people on the Donald are libertarians for the most part. They might not come out right and say it, but they have a there is a certain.
How can you be a libertarian and a nationalist at the same time?
Well, I think there is the argument I have is. That you can want I what I believe in is having small government like many of them do. If you go onto the forum, you'll see people who are very patriotic, who believe in having strong borders, who believe in having some sort of maintenance of American culture, but we also believe in having very limited government. I seldom go onto there, and even though these are the, you know, the nationalists of Reddit who get all this terrible press, many of them are sympathetic to homosexuals and drug users and the like.
Dan,
and if, I mean, if you were to look,
let me ask you a question first. I just want to ask a question, and then I'm going to go into, I'm going to tear into Ian. But what is culture?
So culture is probably going to be the, I don't know if I'm going to use the right word, accumulation of things that are unique to a people or place,
or at least they
having
think
to do
unique.
With their having to do with their art, their beliefs, their religion, their value, their culture, you know, everything that's things like that. And what we're talking about is things that are particularly unique to Americans.
I don't think American culture exists, but you know, as it's defined historically, culture usually means religion and a combination of religion and language. So somebody can have can share a language, but if they don't share the religion in the geographic area, then they're not of the same culture. But historically, that's what it means. Here in the United States, we don't have that. Neither one of those things is, I mean, language, yeah, you've got that. But there's, you know, there's Great Britain, there's Australia, there's those things. So I think somebody's got to give me a better definition for me to really believe that there's a United States culture. The closest I've been able to come is sort of Calvinism, a Calvinist belief in hard work. And that's the best I've been able to come up with. But
so if you come up with a work culture, that means you have to share the religion of your coworkers to have the same
religion in the United States is hard work. and the belief in the government. But Ian, ask you this.
What?
You were saying that how can a person be both libertarian and nationalist at the same time?
Yeah.
Because you were on your tack of one can't be libertarian unless is a libertarian on every issue every time. But let me ask you this.
Well, I hadn't said that, but yes.
Yeah, that's what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Are you a human being? Are you a homo sapien?
By all evidence.
No, yes. No, you're not. All evidence says that you are probably between 2-4% Neanderthal. So okay. You cannot call yourself a human being because we know that you are in part not a human being.
Well, you don't know that about me.
Oh, now? Yeah. Well, look, buddy, your
surname. I could be an alien for all you know.
The surname that I met you with, the one you were born with, is French.
Uh-huh.
And that's where the Neanderthals lived. Okay? So I'm going to go out.
What's your point? What's that have to do with the definition of libertarian?
You believe that you're a human when we know that you're at the very least 3% not. But you won't let somebody who's 3% not libertarian call themselves libertarian. I'm just pointing out.
Well, I can't stop somebody from calling themselves libertarian, which is part of the problem. There's a bunch of people out there, like a bunch of nationalists who would call themselves libertarians and ruin the libertarian label, which is supposed to be somebody who does not agree with aggression. Libertarianism has a very specific definition.
So does Homo sapien, and you don't fit it.
Okay. Whatever, Mark.
But
you're the one
who
said
on air here and correct everybody who comes on and calls themselves a human being?
We need to let people know what libertarianism means. I mean, that's the whole. That's one of the points of communicating is so people can understand what a concept is. And when you water down the ideas of libertarianism with some crap about how you want a government, how you want aggression, then you're destroying the idea of what libertarianism is, which is the opposition
Dan
of aggression.
Dan was very clear. Very clear when he called that these people were largely libertarian.
I don't know if I believe
libertarian.
It. By the way, just because you want smaller government doesn't make you a libertarian.
Yeah, it does.
The genus Homo.
It doesn't.
The genus Homo, by the way, includes all of Neanderthals. So yes. Homo sapien is very clearly still
in the genus, but not the species. They are a cousin of Homo sapiens.
Look, can we get back to Dan and what he was talking about here? So, Dan, you were saying that some of these people are anti-gay. Is that right?
No, program.
No, I said that by and large, you know, we are sympathetic to groups that are conventionally pretty that do exist within the United States, but have been conventionally rejected by many hardline or paleo conservatives. Like my own personal self, I am an atheist, and that doesn't mesh well with a lot of the very conservative crowd. But when you look at people who are like what I would call the young right. People who have this blend, that sort of blend, you'll find that a lot of us are atheists or are
So you're saying the young right, in your mind, which is a new term to me, you're saying this young right is more tolerant than the old right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Of course it is. This would make perfectly good sense, right? Conservative is a moving target. My great-grandmother, Pauline Traub, came over from the old country, and the story is that she beat my great-uncles with a hickory stick when she found a deck of cards in their room.
Mm.
Like, beat them.
Did she make them fetch the stick?
Of course she did. I mean, that's how this was done. And, but no conservative today, very few conservatives today, would do that sort of behavior.
Okay.
Grandma Pauline was a conservative by her standards at her time, but this moves as time goes by. It's the values of some decades past applied to today is basically conservatism.
So your young right would be more tolerant of who? You said drug users, gays, who else?
Exactly. Well, I would say that, I mean, it really kind of, it's hard for me to think out a list, but I mean, if you were to actually like look at the people at our crowds, like one of our biggest, one of our biggest voices might even be that former Breitbart editor, Milo Yiannopoulos, whose book I've actually bought and read because, you know, he is a young gay man who does talk very explicitly about not only small government, but also cultural maintenance and nationalism and patriotism.
So,
that guy has the blend right there.
So you believe in being more tolerant to certain groups like gays or drug users, but not immigrants?
Right.
So why not immigrants?
By the way, it's a foreigner that's talking to you about patriotism here.
Hang on a second, Dan. We're going to bring you back for more of this. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. Why are immigrants so bad if, you know, gays and drug users are tolerable now to the so-called young right? And how is the young right different from the alt-right? Is it that the alt-right is less tolerant than the young right? We'll find out more coming up here in moments. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. We invite you here to join us on the radio. Our number is 855-450-FREE like freedom, 855-450-3733, and you can Skype in to join us here. Skype username is lrn.fm. Joining you tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Mark.
Also, don't forget about how you can shop this holiday season and help Free Talk Live all at the same time. You go to shop.freetalklive.com. It's that simple. There's links there to stores like Walmart and Newegg. And you can get in there and get your shopping taken care of, get gifts for people that you care about, and Free Talk Live benefits when you do that. When you do your shopping through shop.freetalklive.com, we go back to Dan in Nebraska. Dan, you're telling us about a movement that you call the young right. So not to be confused with the alt-right. And I'm wondering if you can explain to me what is the difference.
Oh, they're completely different. The alt-right is an explicitly white nationalist movement that is, I mean, they're not even comparable. They're not even near the same thing.
The
young
the
right,
right
isn't
them.
Even the same thing. Well, right, but they're not even, I wouldn't even say the young right is the same thing as the alt-right, although there's a heavy amount of overlap in there.
Okay.
To an
the
extent.
Alt-right are going to talk a lot about culture, too. Like, they're going to harp on that.
Which is what you've been saying,
that
Dan.
That is true, but it's totally different because if you actually read into those kind of people, like if you've actually ever read anything from alternativeright.com, you'll see that most of it has to do with, I'm trying to think of like scientific racialism and things to that extent.
Yeah, they
which
use
are
culture
not,
as cover for
not,
essentially racial exclusivity.
It's not the same thing.
But it's
it
close.
It is not the same thing.
I mean, if you look at culture as it has been used in history, it is cover for those people over there are bad. I mean, that's what the term gets used for.
I mean, I don't think there are very many people using this term, the young right.
No. This is a new term. He said this in the call.
Okay.
This is his term. He made it up. He's trying to coin it. And, I'm just
You made this up, Dan?
I said that I coined it. I'm not. Okay. If there is a word before it for it, that's not what I'm referring to, and I'll abandon it as my own. If that's true, that it's already a thing.
But is it the case
no,
that
it's not really a thing.
Good placeholder?
What's not a thing? The Young Right?
The Young Right is not really a thing.
Well, I mean, he's saying it is a thing. He's trying to make
it.
Well,
he's saying he's trying to make it a thing, and it currently is not a thing. So it's not something he has to abandon because it's not currently in use. If he's trying to make this a thing, then he's starting fresh.
Right.
I mean,
so
if you Google Young Right, the first thing you get results for is FIFA soccer for some reason.
Okay.
And then the next thing, if you put it in quotes and Google the Young Right,
well,
you get a blog post
somewhere
for, you know, talking about Tommy Lahren, and it's, you know, the Young Right wing star, yeah, breaking the internet.
Well, I mean, everything's got to start somewhere. Would you say that, Dan, that the Young Right is by and large under a certain age?
I would say we're by and large Generation Y and Generation Z. I think that if you're Gen X, you can't be Young Right. You can agree with us, but you can't be
Gen
Young
X is
Right.
Too old.
Too old.
So
right.
Okay. So no, here's what I want to know, though. You talked about how this so-called Young Right is more tolerant. You cited gays. You cited drug users. But you've got a thing against immigrants. What's up with that?
So that's right. I feel like the thing is I don't have we don't have any problem particularly with the idea of immigration, but it's massive, like multi-massive immigration to the point of replacement, to the point of deliberate replacement. And
replacing
that's where
what?
I draw the line. Replacing who's currently here.
How does that happen?
I personally don't find the idea.
When a new immigrant comes here, who has to leave? Like how do they select who leaves the country if they're replacing people?
I mean, there are record numbers of people who are expatriating and leaving the United States, but that's, you know, that
so
doesn't
they're self-selecting?
Yeah, that doesn't have anything to do with immigrants. Those are people who are sick and tired of the government and want to get the hell out of here.
I'm saying, like, Johnson, the proportions of people who are a certain way in the United States who have, who behave and who think like natives are becoming less and less, and
that's a strange thing to say.
Is,
the people who think like natives. I mean, you know, there's 300 million people, right? And they all think differently. There's
man,
not
I
one,
sure do love that apple pie. That I think them immigrants coming in here, though, I'm going to get me a burrito.
Well, okay, it's not. You're kind of like.
This is that nationalist garbage that we were talking about earlier. The idea that there's some sort of overarching way of thinking that natives think. I mean, that's just not true, and it's not true on its face.
So this is what doesn't work about it, Dan. There's a place called New England. There's a place called the Northeast. There's a place called the South. There's a place called Florida, which is different than the South. There's a place called Texas. There's a place called the Southwest, the Northeast, California, Northwest, California, Alaska. All these places really don't have a homogenous culture.
No.
Those culture, they're,
I understand that.
Their religions, their language is different, and they think differently and act differently.
They sure do.
This is the problem, is that ultimately when you harp on culture, dig into this. When you go to the Trump Reddit thing, dig into it. Start asking the questions. Hold on just a second.
I tell you what, boy. I used to want to do Thursday night bowling. Every Thursday night I would go out and do bowling, but now I'm just hoping there'd be a taco truck on every corner.
And when you find out what this culture is, I mean, don't just accept that there's a culture, because when you say, yep, there's an American culture, what you're saying is that, yes, me and my family act a certain way. The people I talk to, there's a certain overarching culture among them. And I'm not going to disagree with that. But the idea that there's some culture that that spans Americans together really doesn't hold. Nope. You're talking about French speakers in Maine, French speakers in Louisiana, Spanish speakers throughout the Southwest. I mean, New Mexico has a bilingual constitution. Let's not forget about Puerto Rico, American
Even
Samoa, and all these other
places.
Even
people between here and the South, for instance, in New England, they're very different, right? So even people within the Christian religion behave differently in different areas. Like when Melanie came up here, she was shocked. She moved up here from Louisiana. She was shocked at how, like, mild the religious people were here. They weren't trying to push themselves on her, for instance, as an atheist.
And she needs to go to the Republican State Convention.
She wasn't expecting what she had received. Now, but all that said, Mark, they tend to kind of keep to themselves up here. It's just sort of a general rule.
You need to go to the Republican State Convention.
I don't go to places like that, Mark. I'm talking about like in the streets.
We got them.
They do exist here. There's no doubt about it. But overall, they don't have the same Bible Belt fervor here that they do in other places.
Not the number of them, no.
So it's just not at all what you're saying is in no way the case, and it only backs up your viewpoint, but you don't have anything to back it up.
I think that actually that almost sort of adds to my own viewpoint in a way, whereas what I believe, at least as of now, is that places like New England, like the reason you can have the Free State Project out in New England is because people out there have that sort of, I want to say, colonialist liberty mindset that was settled by English people who also believed in and understood English common law. Whereas when you come out to
what
a place
to
like Nebraska.
Yeah, the difference between New Hampshire and Massachusetts is like vast. Thanks for the call tonight, Dan. I could have gotten further into
it. I thought my boy was going to grow up playing baseball, but we had to get him one of them sets of Mahjong tiles. I don't even know.
Toll free number here.
Soccer.
855-453.
Men don't play soccer.
855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. Is spreading the message of liberty, cryptocurrency, and peace around the globe worth $2 per month to you? As you may already know, in addition to our internet feed, LRN.FM broadcasts on free-to-air satellite across North and Central America, as well as Sub-Saharan Africa. And we've been available on satellite for free 24/7 since 2010. The LRN.FM free-to-air satellite signal is reaching some of the most oppressive regimes in the world, and there's no doubt our ideas are making an impact. You can learn more about the channel's impact by watching the 3-minute video at fund.lrn.fm. If you'd like to help free minds globally with our ideas of liberty, cryptocurrency, and peace, you can donate as little as $2 per month via fund.lrn.fm. You can help us continue and expand our satellite broadcast to multiple continents. Visit fund.lrn.fm today, and thank you for your help. Don't forget to share the link on social media. That's fund.lrn.fm. Free Talk Live, you may dial toll-free to join us. Our number here is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. SaveItPurse.com. You head over there, you'll save big time on your purchases at Amazon. We're about to run out of toner.
Does that work anymore now with the big transaction fees?
It's saving here. Money? I can choose the discount.
Can you?
Yeah.
I mean, have you done it since the transaction fees were so high? I don't know. I've never used SaveItPurse.com because my wife doesn't let me touch money.
Okay.
So she doesn't.
Well, then don't talk about it then.
I shouldn't ask questions.
I can't believe you've never used SaveItPurse.com and you've talked about it on the air so many times.
I don't buy things.
Wow. All right. Well, anyway, I do. And if you send money to SaveItPurse, there's going to be a transaction fee coming out of it. That much is true. But SaveItPurse.
Big things that you buy.
What?
So you should buy large ticket items.
No. So the way SaveItPurse works is you send your Bitcoin into it.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably would want to send a larger amount of Bitcoin into SaveItPurse.
Okay.
But once it's on SaveItPurse, then it's there.
Okay.
You can just buy whatever you need with it.
Okay.
And besides, I'm talking about big, in this case, I'm looking at buying some toner cartridges, and those things are super expensive. So
inkjet, right? Or laser jet?
Toner would be a laser printer.
Okay.
And so I'm going to shoot for, let's see, we got like, I don't know, you said I think we're down to like 50 pages left, so I probably got to go for a lower discount here. I'm going to try for 25% off. It's saying here a 50% success rate. If it doesn't work out within the next couple days, I can just lower the price to 20% off or whatever. I can keep changing the discount.
Actually, but I have a question because it's been a little while since I've used SaveItPurse.
Yeah.
How has the fees affected this?
That's what Mark was just trying to ask.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of interesting because it's like, you know, before you would kind of want to have a lot of little smaller transactions because people, you know, because the fees were so low and people wanted to get their hands on little small amounts of Bitcoin,
yeah,
you know, and they would buy it through buying your, you know, whatever your putting out on Amazon.
In this case, I already had some Bitcoin in saveitpurse.com, so I've got a few hundred dollars worth
but it's
in there.
The fees are still there on the person who's buying your Bitcoin.
I'm pretty sure saveitpurse is doing off-chain transactions, would be my guess.
Really?
So
okay.
I don't think that you have to worry about fees from buyer to seller.
Because they group all the transactions together.
I would guess they do.
Do it all in one large.
The fee in this case would be when you send the Bitcoin to saveitpurse into your saveitpurse wallet.
Right.
That's when you're going to pay a $10 fee or something like that. So that is going to keep some purchases away from this. You're right. It's going to affect it. You're not likely going to find people who want to buy a $10 toaster through here if they have to pay another $10 just to send the $10 worth of Bitcoin into saveitpurse. So I would say saveitpurse probably at this point with the insane Bitcoin fees, unless saveitpurse decides to open up a different type of cryptocurrency. And I know they have Shapeshift, but you're still going to be paying some sort of fee in that case.
Though somebody who's buying the toaster or whatever, I mean, Purse still has to send that person the Bitcoin once they've made the purchase, right?
That's correct. Yeah, there's going to be a fee probably there.
Yeah, so there's a fee from Purse sending it to that person. So, I mean, I don't understand how.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're going to restrict purchases. Maybe they're restricting smaller level purchases now. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how they're dealing with it, but I'm here about to place an order for $250 worth of printer cartridges, which normally would cost $320. So if I get my discount, I'm going to save $80. And Purse is going to take a fee of $11.62 on that. Now, Purse has always taken a fee out of every purchase.
Right.
So maybe Purse is, to some extent, subsidizing their fees for sending based on the fees from the buyers and all that. I don't know. They're still in business. I'm still going to place this order. I'll let you guys know how long it takes if anybody even bites at 25% off, because it has been probably a few weeks since I have placed an order on Purse, since all of this Bitcoin drama has been going on. So I'll keep you in the loop. But if you want to go and check it out for yourself, you can save big time on your purchases at Amazon. And as long as you're saving more than whatever the fees are, you're still ahead of the game, right? So if it costs you $10 to send into Save It Purse, but you're going to buy a few hundred dollars worth of stuff, it's still worth doing. So, again, right, like I said, this is like a four-pack because we've got a color laser printer here, so you got to get, you got to get all four. You might as well get all four of them. You're going to use them eventually. So, and then I'm trying to knock 25% off of that, so we'll let you know how that goes.
How many years has it been of printing that is?
How many
color
years?
Laser, I mean, toner cartridges last forever. How for
they
you?
They don't last that long.
Really?
I don't know.
We print a lot of things here.
Yeah,
at Free Talk
that's
Live.
True. We get a lot of people.
We hate trees.
Anyway, let's go to Sarah. She's in New Mexico. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Sarah.
Well, yes, I have good news. Is that it turns out a Facebook is planning to build four big buildings instead of just one in Las Lunas.
Okay.
So New Mexico was actually picked over state of Utah, and I kind of wonder why they prefer to build that many big buildings, which is really great because we need all the jobs here in New Mexico.
Screw you.
You're wondering why they want to build four buildings instead of one?
Yeah, because I was originally told that Facebook was going to build one big building. Now they want to build all four together. And you know something? I give credit to the ART, the Rapid Transit on Central. They probably figured that we do something intelligent, like having bright lights.
It probably has to do with the stoplight cameras.
I'm sorry, Sarah. The idea that Facebook is judging where they move their multi-billion-dollar business or open up new offices based on how the traffic conditions are, I don't know.
Downtown Route 66 in Albuquerque doesn't make much sense.
I don't know if that really. Yeah.
Chances are that they're spreading out four buildings because they don't want to go vertical with their operation because they want more surface area on their rooftops to install solar energy so that they can power their operation for free.
Are they into that? The
solar
thing?
You remember the cop shows? You know, we had the number one rated cop shows in the nation.
Okay.
It was, you know what? It was all filled on Central Boulevard.
I doubt that.
With a needle dangling out people's arms. They busting through the
cops has been around for decades, and the most popular cop related TV show. It's, I don't know how many decades it's been now. Three decades probably. And maybe they did film some episodes in Albuquerque, but that's a show that they filmed all across the United States. Sarah, thanks for the call tonight. Toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE, like freedom, if you want to join us.
Congrats on all those hard workers that pay your welfare.
All right. So, Johnson, I know you have a story about the Bitcoin war by Jimmy Song from Medium.com.
That's correct.
I like this guy's articles generally when he's talking about the details of Bitcoin, because he makes it kind of pretty easy to understand for folks.
I think he's a little bit wrong on this, but I'll try and cover this. So the title is The Divorce of Crypto Austrians and Crypto Keynesians, I believe. Keynesians, I think is the...
How's it pronounced,
I know it's...
It's Keynes.
Keynes, right? But I believe Keynesians? Keynesians. Let's go with that.
All right.
The scaling battle that's been raging in the Bitcoin ecosystem the past 3 years is finally over. The entire Bitcoin network has spoken, and it has spoken for what exactly? There are lots of articles that will chronicle for you what's happened in the past few months and years. If you aren't familiar with the story so far, please go read this. In this article, I'm going to try and interpret what this whole drama means, and that this was a link. Anyway... The Great Divorce, the final nail in the coffin of a united community, that was the abandonment of the 2x hard fork earlier this week. But to be truthful, the Bitcoin community has been divided for a long time. The past few years has been the development of separate subreddits, separate forums, and now separate blockchains. It wasn't always this way. Back in 2013, there was a single community united against fiat, excited at the prospect of new and exciting features that would take Bitcoin to the next level. Yet, here we are, 4 years later, post-divorce, wondering what happened. At least nominally, the issue at hand is a block size increase, specifically a hard fork to larger blocks that would enable a larger degree of on-chain scaling.
And this is important because Bitcoin is full, and this is one of the proposals that was supposed to fix it, but no one could agree on.
In the grand scheme of things, this doesn't look like a big issue, so the question we have to ask ourselves is, how did this issue become grounds for divorce? What is the real problem here?
Let's talk about it. Coming up here in moments, you can bring up anything as well. Our toll-free number, 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. This is Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. You dial toll-free. Bring up whatever you want. Our number here, 855-450-FREE. 855-450-3733. The war between the Bitcoiners. Is it over? Well, no, not really. But certainly the controversy over the SegWit2x thing, which was supposed to be some scaling proposal that ultimately people were agreeing on somewhere, but then lots of people dropped out of it, and it ultimately failed last week, which resulted in Bitcoin Cash booming big time, more than doubling in its price, actually quadrupling in its price, then settling down to about double of where it was previously. And there's a story here, Johnson, that you're sharing with us from Medium.com's Jimmy Song, who's trying to get a grasp on all this.
So he's saying exactly, what is the real problem here? Why was there a divorce in the community? Starts off a section on economics with, practical men who believe themselves to be quite exempt from any intellectual influence are usually the slaves of some defunct economist. Madmen in authority who hear voices in the air are distilling their frenzy from some academic scribbler of a few years back. This is a quote from John Maynard Keynes, an economist of some renown. I bring up this quote because I believe it to be relevant to the scaling debate. The real conflict over the past several years wasn't so much about the technical specifics, but about economics. Before I go on, however, I want to introduce to you a couple of different economic theories. The first is Keynesian, which is named after the economist quoted above. The second is Austrian, which is named after some Austrian economists from the last century. Keynesian economics looks at the economy at the macro level and is largely interested with making sure that money and goods are moving. To a Keynesian,
that's velocity of money.
Right. To a Keynesian, exactly what is moving isn't as important as much as the dollar amounts and the speed.
Don't they also support inflation, the Keynesians?
Yeah. There's so much not covered here.
Yeah.
Macroeconomic indicators are interesting to Keynesians, as they believe that numbers like gross domestic product and velocity of money matter more than, say, exactly what products are moving and where the money is being invested. As such, Keynesians tend to be more concerned with consumer confidence, consumption of goods and services, and how quickly money is flowing through the economy. And Austrian economics looks at the economy at the micro levels and is more interested in what generates wealth. Savings and good investments are what ultimately lead to prosperity in this theory, and so not all transactions are good. Bad investments and overconsumption cause down cycles, so those are to be avoided. With these two very useful distinctions, I'm not here to imply that this has a direct one-to-one correlation with what I'm going to describe below. Crypto Keynesians. If you think about the block size limit, it's essentially a speed limit on money moving through Bitcoin. I define crypto Keynesianism as a perspective where moving money through the economy is more important than perhaps an extra level of security around the money itself. For a crypto Keynesian perspective. This is deadly for an economy. For an economy to grow, the crypto-Keynesian perspective requires money to be moving faster and faster. Larger blocks, then, allow for more consumption of goods in Bitcoin and thus are the key to crypto-Keynesian prosperity.
So I believe that this article is giving me brain cancer.
Why?
Because it is stupid. Like the whole idea that Bitcoin is good because it limits the hole through which transactions can go through, that's really dumb. I mean, Bitcoin has not yet reached a usable level to talk about let's limit usability. There are all kinds of there's all kinds of currencies that don't exist that allow no usability. So why not let's advocate for something that doesn't exist because it has no usability?
Yeah.
Stupid.
This guy is...
I agree with you. That's why I brought it in.
Normally, this guy, Jimmy Song, the author here, writes really informative, interesting articles about how Bitcoin's technical side works. But when he gets into economics, he clearly doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. He says, from a crypto-Keynesian perspective, Bitcoin's usefulness increases with the velocity at which the Bitcoin can move through the economy. If the velocity is limited, the thinking goes, the growth of Bitcoin is also limited. In other words, crypto-Keynesian economics emphasizes faster velocity of money because the value of money from a crypto-Keynesian perspective is mainly as a medium of exchange, right? So he's saying basically people like yourself, Ian, who believe that, you know, Bitcoin's value comes from your ability to buy stuff with it.
Yeah.
You know, generally, he's saying that's a Keynesian idea.
When libertarians typically would identify with the Austrian economics.
Yeah.
Yeah, currency, and these are cryptocurrencies we're talking about, is in fact a medium of exchange.
Yeah, I
so
get it.
To say that something should do what it is defined as doing seems like a good idea, right? Like cars should roll forward because that's the definition of cars. Cars would be better and would break down less if they were defined as things that stood still. I mean, this is dumb.
Yeah, he goes on to say, I define crypto-Austrianism as a perspective where the security of sound money is the basis of Bitcoin's utility. From a crypto-Austrian perspective, savings and thus the ability to secure those savings is more important than the ability to exchange it quickly. If a hard fork causes less security, durability, fungibility, or a decrease in the store of value proposition of Bitcoin, it is not worthwhile. Thus, for a crypto-Austrian, the store of value is the property to be protected at all cost, and any change to a coin's security, whether it be a change to the development team or a possible network split that affects vault wallets and possibly lose them money, is not worth it.
See, this is a false choice here to suggest that, well, you can either have it one way or the other. You can have a currency that works as a currency, or you can have a savings thing that you want to just save. The fact is, Bitcoin 3 years ago was both.
Right.
It was something that was going up in value over time, and it was useful as a currency. And there's no reason why it shouldn't continue to be both of those things. You don't have to take one side or the other.
Gold is valuable. Silver is valuable because of utility. Because
you can use it
make jewelry out of it. You can make processor parts. Yeah. You can make medical equipment. You can make things out of gold. The reason that gold has value is because of utility.
So,
the reason that Bitcoin has value is because of purported utility. Mm-hmm. When that utility is gone, that value too will go away. Bitcoin was never sold as a store of value.
They're trying to change it now.
It's not a crypto store of value.
I want to read a little bit of, I'm going to pick and choose here because I know we're short here on time. But I was in an argument with another co-host of Free Talk Live.
Uh-huh.
I believe Thursday night, Chris Reitman. Yep. He said, I'm just going to pick and choose from his comments here. He says, it's completely impractical to buy and sell with gold. No one accepts it at retail locations or really online. To sell with it, you will likely not get your spot price. You'll pay a fee. Yet it's retained its value for the most part, despite the banks depressing the price at all costs. It's still here. Gold and other metals are much in favor of many Austrians. In the high-velocity money view, Keynesian tenet, as long as there are things flowing fast and constantly, that will keep an economy healthy. The velocity means a healthy economy because it's active to Keynesians. Without activity, things must be going well. He's essentially trying to say, like, well, even though gold and silver are impractical, they are a very good store of value, and that's why Bitcoin, where the utility is for Bitcoin.
The difference...
I had a reply to him that I put together. I said, look, the difference between Bitcoin and gold as a store of value is gold's value comes much from its physical properties, rarity as a substance and utility as a substance. Bitcoin, having no physical properties, earns its value from its utility as a currency only, as with other fiat currencies. Without that utility, it's even more worthless than the fuel value that one would get from burning a Federal Reserve note, because Bitcoin doesn't even provide that, because it doesn't have... You can't even burn it.
Yeah.
Speaking of the value of fiat, Federal Reserve notes gets their value from the threats of violence that they are backed with by the federal government. Again, something Bitcoin is lacking. Federal Reserve notes are not valuable merely because of the speed at which they are exchanged, though that is the kind of ridiculous notion a Keynesian would probably support. Bitcoin's value comes from its instantaneous global fungibility. It's not Keynesian to say that.
Well, previously instantaneous.
Yeah, previously. And that's
still
the problem.
It still has it. It just has it at a larger level.
Yeah.
You can send $1,000 at a rate that's fine with Bitcoin, and it's not gonna harm you. You're not going to think badly about spending $20 to send $1,000.
I'll think badly about it because I'm used to a 2-cent Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just going to say, you know, it's not about the speed of the transactions. It's about the source of the value. I think believing Bitcoin is somehow a transcendent kind of fiat borders on religious.
Yeah, sorry. You can replace Bitcoin tomorrow in theory, right? Whereas gold, you know, there's nothing that's going to replace gold because it's an element. It's unique. It's out there. I mean, there are other heavy metals.
I think it's more Austrian to say, hey, don't ever, ever, ever forget Bitcoin's still fiat. And as a fiat currency, that means its value can always return to zero.
There's no doubt about that.
There's competition.
And there's endless competition in that particular world. We're out of time tonight. We'll see you tomorrow online. In the meantime, freetalklive.com. On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of... where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
Your amp will directly change more lives by getting Free Talk Live in front of people looking for talk radio online and on the air. You can help by joining the AMP program for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com and getting perks. That's amp.freetalklive.com.